I want to mention that this is joint work with my wonderful co-authors, Florian Schmidt, Henrik vom Lehn, Tobias Heer, and Klaus Wehrle. And I'm really, really grateful that Henrik and Klaus are also here today. So if I should suffer from some nervous breakdown during the talk, I'm sure they can take up in no time. Okay, so in Aachen, we are systems people, and essentially we really like building stuff, and I think we share that passion with many of you in the audience. And so if you're a grad student and you've just come up with a new mobile ad hoc routing protocol, or you've just implemented a new peer-to-peer client, you'll sooner or later face the question, how do you evaluate such networking software at large scale? And of course, because we're systems people, the first obvious way to do that is, okay, just grab some machines you have in your lab, set up a testbed, and if that doesn't work for you, you can use a shared one as well. But either it's either scalable and costly, either hard in terms of scalability or too costly to set such a thing up, or the shared ones that don't provide you with the needed amount of flexibility you might need for your experiments. So many of us, hence, use network simulation instead. And network simulation is kind of cool because it gives you all the flexibility you need, and you can basically model any network you want. On the other hand, because we're systems people, we're really missing the operating systems context. We cannot conduct the evaluations we want because we simply just like cannot, for instance, look at memory consumption and so on. So in many cases, this is not an option for us. So okay, so there's one nice concept, that's network emulation, which has been around for a while. And actually, it allows you to take real-world software clients that run an operating system, your communication software, and then evaluate them in a simulated network. And if this was so great, we could simply stop here now. However, it also suffers from a very, very important drawback, and that is that it requires a simulation in the middle to operate in real time. And actually, that's what... Okay, so that's actually what the problem slice time solves. Okay, network emulation as we understand it consists of real world clients that execute the communication software you're interested in investigating and in fully operating system. In the middle, we rely on a discrete event-based network simulator such as Omnit++, NS2, NS3, whatever you want. And the goal is that this guy doesn't only model the interconnecting network, but it always also models the simulated context. For instance, it can provide you with simulated hosts, and this gives you scalability. Or if you have, if you're interested in looking into mobile networks, it can model virtual mobility, and because this is simulation, you can repeat this simulation as often as you want, and you get the same mobility all the time. The same applies to radio propagation. It allows you to model any radio propagation or any wireless characteristics you want. Okay, I should also add that we relate. We call the nodes which exchange the data between the real-world clients and the network simulation as gateway nodes. Okay, looking at network emulation, there's a fundamental challenge, and that is that you have two different timing domains. So the network simulation consists of a series of discrete events, and the clock in the network simulation is simply advanced in a gapless fashion from event to event. On the other side, you have real-world clients, and that's an operating system, and of course it uses a continuous progression of time, and hence basically it's the same you have on your watch, that's wall clock time. Okay, so if you look at current implementations of network emulation, you'll find that they all rely on the same way of basically bringing those timing domains together, and that's what they simply do. They simply pin the simulation events to wall clock time, and what you'll find is that basically the simulation is just waiting for the event to be executed, and they basically are implicitly synchronized by the real-world client just continuously running and the simulation waiting until the event has to be executed. However, if you look at this closely, there's a fundamental issue, and that's a time drift issue, because many simulations, because are not real-time capable, because you have very computationally complex models. For instance, if you have ray tracing-based wireless channel models, or if you have very, very many simulated nodes in your simulation, So you easily can build a simulation that is not able to execute in real time. What you'll then find is that your real-world client, in fact, operates much faster than the simulation, and this implicit simulation breaks. And this, of course, if the simulation is really, really slow, this time drift might be even increasing over time. And what this will end up with, or what you will end up with, is probably an incorrect results, because you will observe expiration of timers, for instance, retransmission timers in your networking stack. You will observe different throughputs. You might see packet loss. And here's one example. What I did was, it's hardly visible. So what you would see here is a series of pings where I pinged the overloaded simulation. And the round trip times observed in that ping screenshot I took on the virtual machines are continuously increasing, and that's obviously a bogus result. This raises the question how you can actually prevent such time drifting to enable large-scale and complex network emulation scenarios. Well, we think that there are two options. The first option is, okay, you can simply try and make the simulation execute fast enough. You could either do this by just buying a new simulation slave, or you could try to paralyze the simulation. However, making it faster just by buying a new simulation machine doesn't work if you're a PhD student, you don't have enough money in your pocket, or paralyzing doesn't always work as well. There's another option. And the second option we're looking at is you could also try to slow down the real-world software clients instead to match the execution speed of the simulation. And with SliceTime, we follow this second approach. Before I continue explaining how we do this, I first want to state some requirements for slice time. Of course, the first requirement we have is that we tightly need to synchronize the clients on the simulation. And for that, we actually require the time drifts to be less than a millisecond, because we're actually interested in looking at wide area network scenarios. The second thing is that we actually need to slow down real-world software clients that consist of, first of all, unmodified communication software, either closed or open source, because we don't want to limit the evaluation cases in any way. Second, we want to slow down a legacy operating system as well, for instance, Linux or Windows. And of course, slowing down should be transparent to the clients, because if we actually slow them down and they start to do other things because they somehow observe that we slow them down, this would probably also influence the evaluation results, and we certainly want to avoid that. Third, because we're slowing down the progression of the clients in real-world time, of course, this should introduce little overhead. First, we don't want to take the experiment too much longer, just due to the synchronization process. And second, we don't want to introduce much additional delays or measurement artifacts, because this is an evaluation platform. So this brings us to slice time. Slice time is our platform for synchronized network emulation, as we also call this concept. And what we do is we start off with a regular network emulation setup. But what we do first is that we actually attach a synchronization component to the setup. And the job of the synchronization component is to align the execution speed of the clients and the simulation. The second thing is we use virtual machines instead of, for instance, physical machines, and we need that to actually control the execution of the operating system and the communication software at a very detailed level, and we also need that in order to obtain control of their perception of time, because we want to provide them with a virtual flow of continuous time instead. So how do we synchronize the virtual machines with a network simulation? For that, we need a synchronization algorithm. And because we're operating, because we're working with real-world software and an operating system, we cannot actually make any assumption about their future runtime behavior, or we don't want that. The second thing is because we actually want to really, really have small synchronization intervals, we also don't want to use snapshotting or rollbacks, because we think that this would be too expensive at those fine levels of synchronization accuracy. Okay. Instead, we rely on a very straightforward synchronization approach we call the barrier algorithm. So what slice time does, hence the name, we simply assign tiny slices of runtime to both the simulation and the virtual machines, and those guys are simply able to execute them independently. And once they reach the end of the time slice, the barrier, they simply block the execution. So for instance, if the network simulation is slower again, it simply the virtual machine simply waits until the network simulation has kept up. And this progress simply goes on and on and on. What I should mention as well is that the synchronization accuracy basically is directly corresponding to the time slice size, because it actually because the drift between both of them is directly given by this time slice size. Okay. I'll now show you how we implemented slice time. So the first thing we have is we have virtual machines. In this example, we have one virtual machine running Linux and a corresponding piece of software, and we have a virtual machine that's running Windows. And on the other hand, we have a network simulation. We rely on the NS3 network simulator for this purpose, because NS3 has one great advantage over others, and that is that it uses real-world packets formats as its internal representation, and hence we actually don't have to translate between messages in the simulation domain and simulations from the virtual machines once they basically pass the gateway node. So this saves a lot of work and gives us also the flexibility to basically incorporate any NS3 simulation into a synchronized simulation setup. So the next thing we did is actually we implemented a synchronizer. The synchronizer is a simple user space application. I'll talk about it in a minute. And for the virtual machines, we rely on a SAN hypervisor. What we implemented next is actually, first of all, a synchronization client, which is a Linux kernel module, and that guy simply talks to the synchronizer and exchanges all the information with the synchronizer that is required to implement the barrier algorithm. The second component we have, I'll speak also about both in a minute in more detail, is a modified SEDF scheduler. So we took these original SEDF scheduler and patched it to execute Xen domains for a specified amount of time. The third thing we implemented is a synchronized event scheduler, which follows our barrier synchronization scheme and hence basically executes the simulation for the given time slice size. Finally, we also implemented two communication flows, as we call them, for the exchange of data between a network simulation and the virtual machines. And this communication flow can either carry raw Ethernet frames, or because we also support 802.11 Wi-Fi, raw 802.11 frames. Okay. Speaking about the synchronizer, it simply implements a barrier synchronization algorithm and assigns time slices to the virtual machines and to the network simulation. What's important here is that's a user space application that basically can be placed anywhere in the setup. So you can either run it on a virtual machine, you can run it on a simulation slave, or on any dedicated host in your network. It uses a lightweight signaling protocol based on UDP broadcasts to just transport the messages out, pretty straightforward. And what's also exciting about it is that it actually allows any component, either network simulations or the VMs, to join the synchronization flow at any point in time, and hence you can bootstrap your VMs, your experiment, out of the synchronization and then just add it to it. Speaking about the modified Xen environment, so basically, as you know, or as you've just seen, it consists of two components. The first one is the synchronization client, and it's a Linux kernel module, and it's simply implemented as a Linux kernel module to save context switches. The second component is a modified SEDF scheduler, and what we did, we actually added a second scheduling queue to Xen just to keep the synchronized domain. So basically, the system can run synchronized and non-synchronized domains at the same time. What's also important is that because the Xen SEDF scheduler misattributed some execution times internally to the domains in some incorrect manner, we had to basically take a lot of timestamps calculate how much time is used in the SEDF scheduler and then actually attribute that to the domains instead. What it also does is that it actually virtualizes the time progression for the synchronized domains. So what it simply does is it calculates a lot of delta values for the timers and the clock sources, and once the synchronization goes on, simply subtracts that so that the virtual machine thinks that it has been executed in a gapless in a gapless way and doesn't notify the gaps which are introduced by the synchronization process. Finally, speaking about the network simulation, the synchronized event scheduler is does a very, very simple or straightforward task. It simply checks if the next event in the simulation queue resides in the current time slice. If yes, it executes the event. If not, it blocks. And so this way, we make the simulation follow the synchronization scheme. What you also needed to do is that we had to extend NS3 with in different ways. The first thing is, of course, we had to implement the tunnel protocol to facilitate the data exchange between virtual machines and the network simulation. But what we also did, and that's actually a separate paper we presented at SimuTools last week, was that we implemented a device driver, a Linux kernel module, which provides a wireless networking device. And that is integrated with the 802.11 Mac model of NS3. And this way, you basically can run wireless software on a Linux VM, but that all the traffic is passed through a network simulation. We'll need this in the evaluation part. That's why I'm mentioning it here. OK. Coming to the evaluation, I actually want to answer three questions in the evaluation of our work. And the first question is, how accurate is slice time regarding timing and regarding throughput? The second question I want to answer is, how much overhead is caused by the synchronization at all? And the third question I want to answer is slice time applicable to complex network emulation scenarios? Coming to the first question. So the first question we asked ourselves was like network throughput. So how accurate is the network throughput given in a slice time scenario? So what we did was we set up a very simple scenario and took two virtual machines and a synchronizer, and we varied the level of synchronization accuracy, or the time slice size, so to say. And we were interested how the throughput would change for higher levels of accuracy. And in an ideal case, it wouldn't change at all. And this is the result. We were really happy to see that the perceived bandwidth is invariant to the time slice size. The second question we asked ourselves was, how accurate is it in terms of the integration of the two timing domains? So what we did to figure that out was that we set up a virtual machine which was connected to a gateway node, and we just had one simulated host in the simulation, and we used the synchronizer to synchronize the two guys. So what we then did was we took 1,500 round-trip times and varied it again, we varied the simulated link delay between 0 seconds and five milliseconds. And we actually set the synchronization accuracy to a static time slice size of 100 microseconds. We were actually expecting, in an ideal case, you would not see any additional delay for if the simulated link delay was set to zero. Of course, that's not realistic, so this is the result. So what we see, if no simulation delay is present, we get round-trip times around 200 microseconds, and this is essentially the base delay, as we call it, which is the time you need for exchanging data between the VMs and also the stuff which is caused by the synchronization. For higher simulated link delays, however, we see that this round-trip time distribution is correctly shifted by twice the simulation link delay. Okay. So the second question we asked ourselves regarding timing was, how do different time slice sizes influence our results? So what's actually the influence of the accuracy? We took the same setup, but this time we took a fixed link delay in the simulation and varied the time slice size. So what we end up with is that for a higher synchronization accuracy, we see the RDT distribution shrink and converge towards the base delay. And this is actually also what we hope to expect, but we didn't expect that it would work this way, or this so good. Okay, so the last thing we micro benchmarks we conducted related to the synchronization overhead. So the question we asked ourselves, because we slowed down the systems, we were interested. Okay, of course this doesn't come for free. How long does it take to execute 1 second of virtual time using slice time? And we also So this is the result for two VMs, and we see actually for two VMs that at synchronization accuracies of 100 microseconds or 500 microseconds or less, you actually have a very, very small overhead. However, if you go for higher synchronization accuracies, you see that the overhead increases quite much, and that is due to the messaging complexity of the synchronization approach. If you look at higher numbers of VMs, you see that the overhead is linear in the number of VMs for all time slice sizes, and that's due to our implementation of the synchronization scheduler, which always schedules the synchronized domains in a consecutive way on a, even, yes. Okay. So coming to the third question of our evaluation section, and that's applicability. The question we asked ourselves is, can slice time ease the evaluation of networking software in general? And so what we did is we looked into the literature and found the AODV experiment by Gray et al. In 2003. And what these people did is they conducted a really, really great and really complex experiment. They took 33 laptops, ran AODV in it, had 40 people carrying them around on an athletic field, and they looked at, they generated random UDP traffic and laptops locked the traffic and the positions using GPS, and all the AODV all the AODV evaluation results, as well as the logs and the GPS logs, are available on the Crawdad repository. What we did is we actually rebuilt this experiment using slice time, and we instead used 33 Xen HVM domains and the same AODV software the people from Dartmouth College were using. We used our 802.11 extensions to integrate our HVM domains with a network simulation we set up, which was corresponding to the original experiments. We ran that on one physical PC. And we created an NS3 mobility model based on the GPS traces, and also used a traffic generator to feed the same traffic that was created in the original experiment into the simulation. So how do the results compare? This is the hop count distribution of the original experiment compared to the hop count distribution we observed with slice time. And as you can see, they are close. And the same applies to the packet delivery ratio. However, what I also want to emphasize here, because this is a simulated environment, and you have a different setup as well, there will always be differences, because you always have this disparity between real world and simulation. And of course, you cannot make a very general statement that say, yeah, slice time always achieves 5% or 5% difference compared to real-world deployment, but this example shows that slice time is in fact able to provide results that are close to real-world deployments. Okay, coming to the conclusion, slice time allows network emulation scenarios with network emulations of any complexity, either due to many nodes or network models. From our results, we see that slice time is actually quite accurate regarding the timing and the throughput. And we also think that slice time is resource efficient because it gives you low overhead even for time slice sizes less than a millisecond, and it allows you to save physical hardware resources, especially if you compare it to the testbed size you would need to carry out comparable experiments. What I should mention also is slice time is open source. You can download it, you can play with it, and of course it's still at an early stage, but if you have extensions for it, we're happy about your contributions. And this almost concludes my talk. There's one bullet more. And what I wanted to say is that our general conclusion is that we think that slice time extends the applicability of the concept of network emulation in general as well. So that finally concludes my talk, and I'm happy to take questions.
Hi, this is Jason Lee from II. Depending how many people will ask questions, well, I guess I need to be short. I have a few clarification questions. First of all, in the motivation part, you're saying we're system guys, we want to put the OS there. But I guess what you're really doing is using application and at most some socket, and you stop there. It's not really the OS, because everything else, including routing, you know, all the air interface, everything, you rely on NS3. Is that right?
So basically, you can use. What you want to do is you want a network simulator to model a network a network, for instance, to provide simulated hosts or to provide you with mobility and so on. And what we actually you're free to do whatever you want. So you can also take simply just an application, deploy that to the virtual machine, and connect it to the network simulation and synchronize the execution. However, we don't make basically any assumption what people place in the simulation, what people place in the virtual machine.
Fine, that's fine. In terms of this Wi-Fi add-on, you know, you mentioned this extension. Is that you are adapting NS3 Wi-Fi model?
Yes.
And put that into the virtual machine?
No.
Essentially?
No. So, I'll just explain it verbally. So what we do is basically we implement a device driver, and the device driver provides you a wireless interface.
Right.
That wireless interface basically is your interface, to the communication software. But what it does below is actually it transfers all the stuff into the network simulation. So it basically, instead of sending the things using a real wireless networking card, it transfers it through a simulation. What it also does is that actually it integrates stuff like RSSI values or BSSID and stuff like that. Yeah. So such state information with the wireless interface. So actually able to grab this information using the interface.
I'll be quick. Yeah. So essentially, can I assume that for every real client, your laptop, you have a shadow node or a representative node in the simulation?
Yes, exactly. The gateway.
And also, your real node never transmit anything using the air interface.
Come again? I didn't get the.
Your real client.
Yes.
Never transmit anything over any real interface.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Then how do you compare this with the UpNet shadow model and QuantNet? You know, they all claim hardware in the loop. I guess this is very similar, right?
Yes, of course. I mean, the thing is, hardware in the loop simulations and network emulation, where you have a discrete event-based simulator, and it allows you to pass traffic through. That's not a new concept. It was actually proposed by Kevin Fall like 10 years ago. But what's the new stuff here is that we actually slow down the network simulation to match the execution speed of the VM.
Sure.
And so, basically, of course, we could have also used OpNet to implement that. However, we used NS3. So
okay, I'll defer my other questions.
Okay.
Aaron Gember, University of Wisconsin. Are there certain aspects of your experiment that you want to look at to help sort of dictate what slice time you choose so that you don't impose some artificial total ordering of events within the system? How exactly do you need to be careful about what you're picking for your slice time?
Okay. So essentially, what we've observed is that you should, of course, so what's important in that regard is that, of course, you have round-trip times, which are important for you in a network. And, of course, it's actually important that you pick your time slice size considerably smaller than the round-trip times you have in your network. And that's, for instance, if you have, like, internet cases where your round-trip times average in the magnitude of, let's say, a couple of milliseconds, you shouldn't go less than a millisecond. Of course, if you have smaller delays, things get a bit more tricky because slice time allows you to or gives you max accuracy right now at 50, 60 microseconds, but that's about it. And hence, you cannot use it, for instance, for local area networks. That's because there you observe smaller round-trip times, and at that level, the synchronization doesn't work anymore.
So this is a different take on the same kind of question, which is that, I mean, in a simulator, time is not only slowed, it's also quantized, right? And a real implementation, the time isn't quantized.
Right.
Right. So do you do anything to attempt to make things like packet arrivals and event arrivals in the real implementation appear quantized the way they are in the simulation?
No, we're not doing that. So from our experience.
So for example, you would never, for example, see the same timing and number of receive or transmit interrupts on an interface in the real implementation as you would. Right.
Of course. Yes, of course. I mean, the thing is, this actually also relates to the question of determinism, if I get it right. So the thing is, you will never have the entire setup execute in a deterministic fashion. So basically,
I'm saying even if you wanted to make it deterministic, you can't because you can't replicate the time
exactly.
And quantization in the real implementation.
Yes, we don't synchronize the exchange of packets.
Right. So you don't get the ability to do absolute replicability.
No, we don't.
When
have
you
that.
Do that. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay.